To Parenting Matters on Nashville Catholic Radio, WBOU 100.5 FM, sponsored by the Family Life Office of the Diocese of Nashville and Brian and Angela Fernandez and Joe and Margie Imorti. Your host for the program is Dr. Parr Donahue. Dr. Parr has years of experience in pediatrics and parenting. He was named the Senior Pediatrician of the Year by the Tennessee Chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics in 2014. Dr. Parr is the author of four books, including books on parenting entitled Messengers in Denim, The Amazing Things Parents Can Learn from Teens, and Tools for Effective Parenting. Visit Dr. Parr's blog at www.parentingwithdrparr.com. Here's your host, Dr. Parr Donahue.
Welcome to Parenting Matters on WBOU FM, 100.5 on your dial, and streaming throughout the world on WBOU.org. Our subject today, exercise and health. Heather Lusink, an exercise physiologist at Williamson Medical Center, is our guest expert. Later in the show, Barb and Andy Rettler will join her to round out our panel. A great big welcome to you, our guests, and to you, our listeners. Now my monologue. Many years ago, when I was in high school, long before Ken Cooper popularized aerobic exercise, people thought machines were invented so we wouldn't have to work so hard. Why walk when you can ride was the popular mantra. Then a new teacher came to our school to run the physical education department. On the first day of class, he told us to run laps around the outfield. Every boy laughed and refused. Coach became a bit exasperated and said if we wouldn't run, he would push each of us around the field. He got behind the biggest and oldest member of the class and pushed him around the field, hoping we would follow. But the rest of us stood, watched, and laughed. Coach soon returned, somewhat winded, and bid us all to follow as he began to push the second boy. We didn't move. When they returned, Coach was out of breath, shook his head, and dismissed the class. My, how times have changed. Kids today love to exercise because they see their parents and other adults exercise, and they realize it can be fun. But the bad news is kids are so involved in media and other activities that they don't have time during the day to play, study, talk, or sleep. According to the American Academy of Pediatrics, kids need at least 1 hour of exercise, preferably out of doors, every day. The doctor who wrote that policy said, quote, families should proactively think about their children's media and use and talk with their children about it. What's most important, he said, is that parents be their child's media mentor. That means teaching them how to use media as a tool to create, connect, and learn. And I might add, to learn to turn it off. We have discussed media use in an earlier show. You can listen to it on www.parenting-matters.com. Just click on the audio blog. Now, in my opinion, the best form of exercise for kids is good old-fashioned playing with each other outside. Kids need time to explore the park, the creek, the woods, and all of God's creation. In so doing, they will run, walk, climb, jump, skip, hop, and yes, get dirty. They will have time to create new games with their own rules, learn leadership, teamwork, stimulate imagination, and best of all, get tired. Many will develop an interest in science. Now, active kids have fewer infections, sleep better, memorize quicker, and are less likely to become overweight, and in general, they are healthier than those who spend their time indoors staring at a screen of any kind. As kids enter middle school and high school, many will find interest in team sports. In high school, one sport at a time is enough for any student. That allows them time for music, band or choir, acting, forensics, homework, and chores. But the key is to limit after-school activities because most important of all is time spent with their parents doing household chores, playing games, and learning all those things that parents teach by their actions, their words, and by osmosis. Mm-hmm. What about travel teams? While local baseball coach Chuck Schumacher, in his book, How to Play Baseball, A Parent's Role in Their Child's Journey, decries travel teams. These teams, he said, keep kids busy all summer doing what they are passionate about. But by the season's end, they're exhausted and often disgusted about all the things they missed because of baseball. Some will have missed family vacations, swimming, and generally good old-fashioned play. This overkill of baseball kills their fervor for the sport. He goes on to say he has seen far too many good baseball players give up the sport before the season is over or right after it's finished because it's too time-consuming. Kids need time to be kids, not miniature professional athletes. Well, what about injuries? Help your kid choose a sport that they're passionate about. Make sure they know the rules and are taught proper technique. During the 4 years I spent working at a sports injury clinic, I learned that many injuries are related to faulty technique or infraction of a rule of play. Talk to them and their coaches about making play as safe as possible. Parents worry too about concussions. Recent studies show that every year in the United States, about 1.5 million kids, 18 and under, suffer a recreational or sports-related concussion. Common symptoms of concussions include loss of consciousness, headaches, visual problems, dizziness, answering questions slowly, or repeating the same question. Athletes of any age who develop these symptoms after a fall or bump on the head must see a doctor right away. Return to activity, including school and studies, must be gradual and directed by a physician. While concussions are a valid concern, they need not rule out participation in sports. Baseball, volleyball, track, field, swimming, and gymnastics have a very low rate of concussions, only 0.1 to 0.14 per 1,000 players. While wrestling, basketball, field hockey, and boys' soccer have a slightly higher rate, 0.25 to 0.4, girls' soccer, ice hockey, and football have a somewhat rate even higher, 0.4 to 0.94 per 100,000 per 1,000 patients. There's so much more to say about exercise and in so many ways it benefits. So I want to introduce our guest, Heather Lusing. Heather is one of the founders and director of cardiac rehab at Williamson Medical Center. She has a bachelor's degree in kinesiology from University of Wisconsin-Madison and a master's from University of Wisconsin-La Crosse in clinical exercise physiology. She's a wonderful friend and an inspiration to all who she sees. She lives in Franklin, Tennessee with her husband Jason and their daughters Paige and Tenley. Family worships at Christ Community Church in Franklin. Welcome, Heather, to Parenting Matters on WBOU-FM 100.5 on your dial and streaming throughout the world on WBOU.org. It's a great pleasure having you here.
Thank you for having me.
Why don't you begin by telling us about your family and how you and your children get exercise?
Well, I have two girls, and my husband is an avid runner. He runs trails all over the South and has done some trail races, endurance races like that. And with that, our girls, at a young age, we got them into hiking because we believe they should get dirty as well. So we like to go out and hike as a family. We do that most weekends. And our girls are also involved in sports. They've tried everything that you can imagine. My 11-year-old has done it all, soccer, basketball. She did a foray in softball, and she's landed on golf. She really enjoys golf, and now she's getting into running, so she's enjoying that.
Well, that's wonderful. You know, I learned long ago that kids learn to run about the same time they learn to walk. And then we parents start our litany, don't run, walk, don't run, walk. And go to the pool, and you see these kids running along the side of the pool as the lifeguard is saying, don't run, walk, walk, walk. Then all of a sudden we say, now go out in the field and run. Is that good parenting, or is that part of the problem?
It's probably a little bit of both. You don't want them to fall and hit their head, but at the same time, we want them to be active. I think when they're young, safety is important to teach them so that they know what the risks can be of, you know, running into the road or running on a wet floor at a pool. But then as they get into elementary school, we need to teach them to get up and move. They don't have gym class like they did when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. they sit around a lot more throughout the day, and then they come home and they sit even more because of the amount of homework that's put on them, and they don't get to just go run out and play, mm-hmm. and they need to be out there playing, running, jumping, mm-hmm. you know, finding ways to learn about the world around them.
You bet. I sort of slipped over the benefits of exercise. Would you just sort of reinforce what benefits exercise has on our kids?
I could go on forever and ever. It's good for their mind. It's good for their attention spans. It's good for their health, obviously. It's good for them to learn about all that their body can do, because so many times kids think they can't do things. And the truth is, if they were running around playing, they'd realize just how strong they are. But I think most of all, they get so much out of getting more oxygen into their bloodstream and playing with friends and learning team dynamics as well. So exercise for kids, just, it's a natural part of being a child.
Heather, you're a physiologist, so would you like to tell us about carb loading and how that works, if it does?
Well, I think carb loading is something that endurance athletes need to know about. But as for children, they pretty much only eat carbs. So there's no need for them to be carb loading. Even kids that play travel teams and, you know, might be in like back-to-back soccer or basketball or even baseball games don't really need to carb load, because they eat so many carbs in everything that they're mm-hmm. eating all day long.
And how does carb loading help?
So the idea behind carb loading is that as you intake carbs, you can store them in your muscles, and you'll have them for when you burn off all of your stores, and the body can then easily access them and you won't get fatigued as easily. But again, with kids, because of the amount they eat, there's just mm-hmm. no reason mm-hmm. to do that.
Good. Well, let's bring on our panel. You met our panel members, Barb and Andy Rettler, before. They were the guests on one of our first shows. They are both friends of mine and the parents of two boys and two girls ages 15 to 27. Andy and I belong in the men's reading club at Holy Family. Thank you both for agreeing to be on our show once again.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Bar.
Heather mentioned something about not having enough time for PE in school. Do you think that our physical education programs are okay, or is there ways to improve them?
The PE programs today that we're seeing as our kids have been going through seem to be evolving every 2 to 3 years, and they're still trying to find their norm. We've seen physical education be balanced out for something else, and then we've seen attention for it as well, too. I think the one thing we've been seeing that's really good about physical education is the focus on health education. A lot of what Heather's been talking about with food and diet and lifestyle, and now with, you know, a lot of the things we're hearing about with vaping and things like that, those are very common conversations, very timely conversations that are going on within the schools. So while they may be exercising less, I think they are actually being smarter about exercise and smarter about their lifestyles.
Mm-hmm. I think that you're totally right. We need more time for PE, and we need to have better PE programs. Mm-hmm. And we need to have students who are more cooperative than I was when I was in high school. I had a discussion some time ago, and often we hear psychologists and educators tell us that teenagers can't get to sleep until after 10 p.m. or 11 p.m. because they don't make enough melatonin. Melatonin's a sleep hormone. Until after 11 o'clock. Some studies show that kids who start school later in the morning get better grades and are generally more successful. So the advocates say school should start later in the morning. Why don't you tell me about your feelings on that? Barb, you've raised 4 kids.
Yes, and it seems to me that the younger the child, the earlier they get up. So, and it's true, they get home from school, the middle schoolers and the high schoolers do their homework. By the time they get done all their activities, they don't get to bed until later. They have to wake up at the crack of dawn. They're exhausted. I do think that there would be benefit to switching the schedules a little so that they get a little bit later start to their day and are able to accomplish all of their academic work at the end of the
Well, thank you. Heather, you know, we talked about this 25-hour clock and all that kind of stuff. Do you think that that's a real thing, or think that's some more psychobabble?
I go on the side of psychobabble. I tend to think that part of the reason they're not tired is because they're not moving as much. As someone who, you know, wasn't that long ago that I remember high school, and I remember because I was exhausted by 10:30, but I was also in cheerleading and marching band and playing sports and volleyball and being active all that time. I was so tired. I can't imagine these kids that are staying up till midnight, 1 o'clock, you know, doing who knows what. And yes, it's still hard to get up in the morning. I remember that too. But I don't really think that that is a real thing, that they really can't fall asleep. I think they're just not tired because they're not moving during the day.
I think the exercise helps people sleep then.
Absolutely, absolutely. It helps people sleep.
And do you have any thoughts on that?
The iPhone was invented or brought out to the market 10 years ago. And just 2, 3, 4, 5 years ago, we've been starting to hear about blue light. And I think, you know, I can think back to my grandfather sitting in a Lazy Boy chair, you know, falling asleep to TV. Seemed like it was a natural, healthy thing to do. You know, he's a hard worker. But today, having those electronics in front of us as much as we do as an educational tool, I think there's something to the studies that say, you know, you got to break away from it. And your mind is, whatever is going on in that mind, which I don't understand or can't describe what it is, you know, you got to free yourself up. So the exercise, you know, replaces the screen time, you know, which is great. And it does all the things that Heather's talking about. But at the same time, it lets you disengage and let that mind start to slow down or organize the way that it needs to. And all the studies say, don't even look at anything that has a screen for an hour before you go to sleep. It's very clear, you know, right now, and the phones even have those features on them where you can lock things down. Mm-hmm. So I think that might add to it as well, too, is just the amount of video time that we're seeing from all of us in different ways.
Barb, do you have any thoughts how a mother may have some control? Because a lot of times it's responsibility is mothers. And any ideas of how we can get these phones and other tools away from our kids?
Well, we started recently having a station in the kitchen where the phone has to remain from the time they get home from school or their activities until basically the next morning. Mm-hmm. We see a trend recently where the teachers, through various apps or avenues, send assignments or notifications through the phone. So they... basically required if you want to keep up or be updated on mm-hmm. assignments. So that's a challenge, but we do keep it on the counter, and if occasionally we check to see if there is a notification on the screen, and if it pertains to a homework assignment or studies, then we let Jack take a look at it.
So you don't let poor Jack have his phone in bed so he can help all of his friends who need him at 2 o'clock in the morning?
And no, and he's learning that that's his own worst enemy.
Mm-hmm. Basically. Actually, we tried, and then what we ended up doing is we had to forbid phones from the second floor. Mm-hmm. So no phones are allowed on the mm-hmm. second floor. Mm-hmm. And it actually works. There's actually relief. And just a side comment, I do a lot with scouting, and the boys are showing up at the camping trips, they're showing up to meetings. And you see them now actually relieved when we put all the phones in a pile over on the side where we go on a camping trip. They're not even bringing things on the bus or in the car with them. The parents are helping them disengage. And what we're beginning to see out of it is a different personality of the boy.
Heather, you're getting ready to say something.
Well, I was going to say, we also see that at our church. I help with our elementary group, and we have high schoolers that come and are, you know, our teen leaders with them. And it's amazing to me because we started implementing this phone box, mm-hmm. and they just dump it in there. They're like, yay, I'm free from it for a couple hours, and they enjoy it.
It does. It's so paralyzing, isn't it? It paralyzes thought and talk, conversation, and you know, sit with somebody who they're looking on their phone all the time, every 15 seconds, just want to get up and walk out of the room. So Now, it seems to me, Heather, that your kids are sort of like their mother, and they're anxious to play and run and do sports and stuff. But what do you do about these kids who don't seem to have a lot of interest in sports? Any way to challenge them?
Oh, sure. I mean, sports aren't the be-all, end-all of exercise. Mm-hmm. It can be as simple as, you know, going for a walk as a family, mm-hmm. and just using walking as a time to connect and be away from the media, be away from the computer, you know, get away from maybe what's going on at school, or talk about what's going on at school for the kids, mm-hmm. and just get them up and moving. It certainly does not have to be an organized sport. Finding a friend in the neighborhood that somebody can go out and play with, and, you know, play can be all kinds of different things from the elementary age up to the high school age. It just takes on different forms. I see church youth groups where they're out playing, you know, frisbee in the big yards of churches, and they're having a great time. I wish I could go join them.
Yeah.
So there's lots of different ways to involve kids in exercise, but you've got to make it a priority and show them that your health is a priority.
Andy?
One of the things that Barb and I have come to appreciate is yard work. And we have four children who do not volunteer to come out and help us do yard work. In fact, there's a real great story where we were digging a ditch with my oldest son, and AJ said to me, I said, AJ, anytime you want to hop in here with your shovel. And he said, Dad, it looks like you're doing a fine job yourself. You know, you can kind of keep going at it yourself. And he's a great guy, and he's a really hard worker. But I didn't give him a specific task to do, nor did I give him his value that he could get out of it. I said, let's dig this ditch rather than you dig this ditch while I do this ditch. So we've been doing a lot of yard work, a lot of tools. You can never have enough tools for them. Kids like to use tools. They like to use implements. They like to see things change. And you get them outside in the sun, you get the vitamin D going, you get some sweat going, stretching muscles, dragging bags of dirt, and what comes from it all is a high sense of satisfaction.
Isn't that true? Mm-hmm. I think that's one of our problems we have even with our adults, not only with exercise, but, you know, if you work in a factory, you just put this door on the car. You know, you never get a chance to see, say, I built this car. Mm-hmm. But if you're working in your yard and doing planting your grass and flowers and cutting shrubs, you might say, man, that looks really good. I did that. And I think that self-satisfaction is so important. Heather, what about kidnapping? Don't you worry about your kids being kidnapped when you put them outside?
So when my kids were really little, of course I did. Mm-hmm. But now they're 11 and 7. We let them ride their bikes to the local park, which is only a few blocks away. And we have time constraints. You know, if they're not home by the time they're supposed to be, mm-hmm. of course a little bit of me gets anxious. And sure. I'm heading down to the park. Why aren't they home? The one time that that's happened, they just forgot to look at their watch. And it hasn't happened since that time because we had a big discussion about mm-hmm. that. But they know not to walk off with strangers. They know where they're supposed to be and when they're supposed to be mm-hmm. back. It's good for kids to have that little bit of independence. And I think as they grow, and I'm just, you know, early in this process, but we're trying to give them a little more independence as they go.
Barb?
I never worried about my children being kidnapped, but with the evolution of technology and getting immediate answers, and it has added to the stress. Oh my goodness, I haven't heard from them. It's been 2 minutes. Oh my gosh, I haven't heard from them. It's now been 5 minutes. Like, so it does take a conscious effort to let them explore and go out on their own, and they're going to be okay.
Yeah, it seems that you know, there was this kidnapping in Upper Wisconsin. Heather and I are both from Wisconsin, and we was bothersome. This man shot the lock off the house and went in and shot both the parents and kidnapped the girl. And fortunately, she got away last month after almost 3 months, last week, I mean. But, you know, kidnapping by strangers is very, very rare. And they say that probably 90% of kidnapping, the kid knows the kidnapper. Often it's the strange spouse of the parent or the uncle or somebody in the family who wants a kid. Well, Heather, I think you all three brought up the idea that it might be fair to say that when it comes to exercise, like everything else, kids do what their parents do. Mm-hmm. So be the person you want your kid to become. And I think that's so important. Over and over again, I keep saying that. And when it comes to kidnapping, my wife said that she wasn't worrying about some of our grandkids getting kidnapped because if they ever did, they'd bring them back. Well, it's about time to wrap this up. It's been a great pleasure having you all here today and talking with you. We could go on and on for a long, long time. And I want to remind you, you're listening to WBOU-FM 100.5 on your dial and streaming throughout the world on WBOU.org. A special thanks to our guests for making this such an interesting show. Now, before I sign off, one quick story. Some years ago, Heather, your alma mater, Madison University, Wisconsin, published a study comparing 6 months of exercise with medication or psychotherapy for treatment of depressed college kids. The kids on antidepressant medication were the first to get better, then the exercise group, and trailing far behind was the group treated with psychotherapy. Those in the psychotherapy group were so slow to recover that by the time the 6 months treatment course was up, many had quit school. Those who remained regressed when the therapy was stopped, as did the medicated group. However, the runners didn't want to quit running. They became depressed, and depression did not recur. A short time after I read that article, I ran into John, a depressed high school boy, came to see me with his mom because of his depression. I discussed the article with him and with his mother, and together we decided to treat John with exercise. He was to start running daily, increase the distance each week, and return in 1 month. On his return, he said he didn't think the treatment was working, but he continued to run because, he said, he was beginning to enjoy it. Now, depressed kids don't enjoy much, but he was beginning to enjoy running. He scheduled an appointment to see me a month later, but when that day of his appointment arrived, John did not show. By closing time, I was concerned and called his home. Mother said he was doing great, and he was so excited to tell me how well he was doing. She said he was so surprised he didn't show. Just then, our conversation was interrupted by a loud knocking on the locked office door. I looked out to see John's smiling face. "Sorry I'm late," he said. "I didn't know it would take so long to run over here." Mom and I breathed sighs of relief and delight. By this time, the sun was well below the horizon, and it was wintertime, so I decided to drive John the 7 miles to his home. John continued his running throughout the high school years, and when I saw him for college, he was the same happy boy I knew when he was in grade school. Now, here's your homework. Sit down with your kids and your spouse and analyze how much time each of you spend exercising. Then look at yourself and your spouse and determine if you are being good role models. If not, make some changes. Then go to my website, www.parenting-matters.com, and tell us what you found and what you decided to do about it. And if you would like to be a guest on our Parenting Matters, add a short bio to your note and tell me what you would like to discuss. Thanks for listening, and may God continue to bless you and your family.
Thank you for listening to another edition of Parenting Matters with Dr. Parr Donahue. Parenting Matters is produced and recorded inside the studios at the Catholic Pastoral Center. Thanks again for listening to WBOU 100.5 FM and streaming at WBOU.org.